Gentlemen, boys and ghouls, to all of our non-binary friends, to everyone on the spectrum and in between, welcome to another episode of The Shudder Show. My name is Ken Stacknick. With me, as always, is...
David Marlowe.
And not with me, as always, is our friend...
Andy Green.
Hey,
wait, but
Andy,
by the way, not with me always, does that mean I'm not here? That's kind of a confusing intro.
In our hearts, you are always...
David's okay. Always here with me because then it would be a show. Yeah, it would just because otherwise it would just be me ranting into a microphone, which somebody might want. But
Ken, we also have vials of each other's blood.
Like this is true. We have some real Billy Bob Thornton, Angelina Jolie vibes going.
So we are always with each other.
Oh, that's really cute. Yeah, it's kind of like a vampire thing, though. I'm imagining like that's what I don't know. You might just need that for a little taste. If you're without with each other.
Actually, a satiates lot of people don't know this, but Only Lovers Left Alive was actually based on me and David.
guys, we are here with
artists. And spoilers, I'm Tilda Swinton.
I see the resemblance.
Actually, I don't know. David's looking more Tilda today. It's all
I'm going full beardless and it really brings out the red in these luscious lips. And it's this light does not make it look all that great.
Well, speaking of a particular ginger skin tone, I guess we're talking about the movie this week, the 1976 movie by Brian De Palma. We're talking about Carrie, motherfuckers.
Which, yes.
Hell yes, we are, because this movie. Oh, man. Like we said last week that October was going to be nothing but bangers. And oh boy, are we not wrong. Carrie, as a rewatch for recently, this movie is a banger and a half. It kicks the door in. Brian De Palma screams, "Behold, my film dick is huge. And this movie is rad. And it's so good. It's so fun. This is the perfect movie to bring in Halloween, in my opinion, because it's just a bag full of fun. Andy, sorry, you're our guest. You should say things, and I should say less things.
What would you like me to say?
Well, Andy, you are
interesting.
Fun and interesting. Well, this is my second time to Carrie, and I will say I had the exact same experience. I think the first time I was in there, it didn't. I will just say, I think the movie. Just leapt in my mind in the last, I think it's been 10 years since I've seen it. And it is just so, it ages really well. And I love it more this time. But we'll get into that. I don't think that's fun or interesting, but that was just sort of my, you said the rad dick, this is a rad movie, but it's also a red movie too. And I think we get that red of the holiday. I'm just seeing red right now, and I have a little anger in me. I'm very excited to unleash that, hopefully in a safe way.
This is definitely a film that takes adolescent high school life and magnifies it to the microscopic level of uncomfortable and absurd. And nobody could better display this than Brian De fucking Palma, and I hadn't seen this movie in ages, absolutely. And I remembered almost nothing except for your key essential, societal parts of this film that you would know about, just the massacre, pretty much.
Well, it's
and
the
that's
locker
about
room.
It.
Yeah, the locker room, and then the prom scene. Like, I feel like those are just seared in all of our minds, even if you haven't even seen the movie.
Right? I forgot John Travolta was in this movie.
Me too.
By the way, John Travolta's first feature film for John Travolta. This is what introduced him to the world, is him getting a blowjob from a ventriloquist.
And I feel like it's sort of sets the stage for his career, right? Like, this feels like John Travolta for sure. Fully formed asshole from day one.
I mean, let's face it. John Travolta, being the Scientologist he is getting the constant ventriloquist blowjob from the Church of Scientology.
Ah.
Constantly telling him what to say. But that's neither here nor there.
So you're saying ventriloquist blowjob because it's clearly not a blowjob and just has a dummy there?
If you look at literally when she is performing the act, you hear the voiceover of her just talking, and it doesn't sync up with it's such a strange
Think you can talk clearly when that is happening.
She seems occupied.
Like, what I think this movie really gets right is
car blowjobs.
So this movie is both very sexual, but at the same time, it's very awkward. And the thing I think this gets right the most about middle school / early high school is how weird and gross all of that puberty feeling is. Like, I definitely remembered the scene where she gets her period for the first time. Mm-hmm. What I forgot about with the scene that really fucking hit with me this time was she running out to everybody and being like, I am fucking dying. Someone help me. And with all of those people,
bloody hands just touching
and
people.
And those people just being like, get your fucking gross cooties away from me. And the dynamism of those two things is what this movie gets absolutely right about high school. It is the fact that Carrie can walk onto the stage and honestly believe she is going to be the prom queen. And oh my God, this actually might be right. And then, the other thing that I forgot about it is how much they milk. Is this going to happen? Is the teacher going to notice this? Is the person going to be like, hey, wait, what are you fuckers doing below the stage? Oh my God. No, this is going to destroy. Oh my God. And the fact that it goes off for minutes, the fact that there is 20 minutes before this movie ends, that is just basically might as well be one line in the script that says, Carrie goes nuts, covered in blood, very mad about it. Could be that. And you'd be like, yeah, no, that's exactly what happens. And that goes on for 20 minutes and it's incredible.
Oh, it doesn't feel like 20 minutes, although it also kind of feels like 3 years of my life too.
The whole end of this movie is just horrifying. And that's what this movie gets so right, is the theatricality of it all makes it, because that's the thing about high school that people don't think about, is that it is this big theatrical performance. And so that's what Brian De Palma's doing. And it might, to a lot of people, be like, he's going too much. Perfect. No notes. Piper Laurie in this movie is just a lunatic, but in a way that you understand. You're kind of like, yeah, but what if also I was terrified of my telekinetic daughter? How else would I respond?
So now, did either of you guys attend any variation of Catholic school or religious school as a kid?
I did not.
One grade. I did first grade.
On the other hand, have been to multiple Catholic schools. Mm. And what's crazy is actually there was an article that came out about my high school recently about how they hosted a gay conversion expert at one of their events, and so now it's in the Indianapolis News right now, and my high school is not looking very good right now, but it is again another testament to sometimes how you take the toxicity of religion and then pair it with the ultra toxicity of just children and how genuinely monstrous children are, because they don't fully, nobody's brains are fully developed to their at least 25. Nobody is born with empathy. Like, you that has to be fucking taught. And what you're seeing in this film is a representation of what it looks like with kids who are still trying to develop empathy. Some you're seeing it in, you see it in with a teacher. You see it with the one student who convinces her boyfriend to take, Sue, who convinces her boyfriend to take Carrie to the prom in the first place. Like, you're seeing everyone navigate their early adolescence all the same time, while you have Carrie completely being stunted by not necessarily religion, but ultra religion, by like a mom who just can't seem to fathom anything outside her religious sphere. It's a crazy mess.
Well, it's a mom who the only good thing that's ever happened to her life is she was raped and had this daughter who she cares for. But as she says, like, I really liked it and it made me feel super bad. And like, I'm super glad that you're here, but also let's be clear that you're here because of sin, which.
But then also when you keep in mind, like when she talks about that, to keep in mind just how messed up and confusing the rape was, she was married. Like, in the book, in the book itself, like, I don't know. Have either of you guys actually read the book at all? Or?
I've never actually read a single word of Stephen King.
Oh, Ken.
Sorry.
Ken, it is.
Yeah. Oh, I can top man. That. Yeah. I have not read Carrie.
I'm aware that someone just gasped.
So for one thing, like, how Carrie originally had a sister, and that's kind of what was used for the plot of Carrie 2, The Rage. They kind of took a little bit from that storyline. But the whole thing was that the mother, got married in an ultra-religious family, but then was still convinced that the act of sex and the act of enjoying sex was in and of itself a sin. And so she pretty much told her husband, we will never consummate this marriage. It will be a sexless marriage. We will not live in sin. Imagine being a husband and finally getting to do the deed, then all of a sudden just be like, yeah, no, it's never going to happen, ever. And then all of a sudden having all of this weird confusion on both sides, and then birthing a child completely based on that, and then the husband just leaves, and that whole abuse system continues to happen. And how she actually develops her powers in the book was that there was a neighbor of hers that was sunning outside in her backyard in a bikini, and so Carrie was outside at the same time. She goes up to her and she asks her, what are those? And she's referring to her breasts.
The dirty pillows.
That's the thing. She goes like, what are those? The dirty pillows. That's where the phrase comes from, is when she first asked this woman what they were. And her mother loses her fucking shit and then accuses the woman of trying to corrupt her daughter. And it becomes this whole thing. And then the mother of that woman goes and to get back at her, buys her just another bikini.
Skimpier, like, hopefully.
Yeah, skimpier. And then here's the thing. From there, that's when her power manifests, and there is a small meteor storm, which is exactly what was supposed to happen at the end of the film, Carrie. In fact, Brian De Palma originally had planned to shoot a scene in which Carrie makes it rain
meteors,
rocks. So if you look at the actual cut, you will see little boulders going through her house. But the way that they built the model, the mechanism that was releasing them jammed, and they were losing light and they weren't going to be able to get it. And so Brian De Palma just like, fuck it, nix it. A lot of the budget went to that. The producers were really unhappy about it, but like, it had to be cut. But they had already filmed the interior scenes first. And so if you look carefully in there, you'll see like little objects falling through her house. That's what that's supposed to be. And so there was going to be another scene that was going to be shot that got completely nixed at the beginning, which was when she got her powers.
Oh.
Yeah. There's so much crazy shit.
Well, like, that makes so much sense now, because like, watching this, the third act of this movie does feel incredibly rushed for as much time as they take setting things up. Like there's the scene where the boy who asks Carrie out to the dance,
Tommy,
and there's the scene, yeah, Tommy, and there's the scene with his girlfriend where his girlfriend is like convincing him to do it, and it takes like a while. In like any other movie, it would be like, hey, would you do this? He'd be like, yeah, baby, you got boobs. Yeah. And that would be it. And in this movie, he's really like, are you sure? I don't know. It seems pretty fucked up. Do you really want to? Yeah, okay. Yeah, no. Yeah, we should definitely do this. And like that scene, like it's just so weird how much that scene takes its time for as much as the ending felt rushed. And if what they're fixing is, oh, actually, we don't have meteors anymore, and so now it's just a telekinetic battle. That completely makes director sense for me for like how you're making the best of a bad situation. You know what I mean? Like that's when you're getting paid to really direct. You know, mm-hmm. you're not getting paid to direct when you can just hire Meryl Streep and call it a day. Like, no, you're getting paid to direct when like the set is on fire. And Meryl Streep has stomach poison. And you're like, well, it's me and the dog. And I guess we're going to make a scene today. And that's when you find out if you got the, you know, if you got the chutzpah or not.
Well it's crazy how, oh, sorry, go for it, Andy.
Oh, I was going to say, like, the ending, I feel like, works, you know? Like, it doesn't, like, even if I saw meteors, that would just make it cool. I don't need an explanation at this point.
Yeah,
like it's totally. Like, literally the house is going into hell. Like that's sort of the vibe we're getting almost from a literal sense.
It's a very Red State ending.
Yeah.
Almost. Even just Drag Me to Hell. Like,
yeah.
Sam Raimi is clearly inspired by this movie by its just direct nature of like those hands coming out of that dirt.
Right.
That's straight Drag Me to Hell.
What's so crazy about this film is how much effort and how much care De Palma put in this, despite the fact that at this point, Stephen King was not a well-known name. Literally, Carrie is Stephen King's first film adaptation. So much so to the point that they spelled Stephen King's name wrong in the opening credits. They spell it with a S-T-E-V-E-N.
Oof.
Yeah.
They didn't catch that. He didn't get to.
they didn't even invite him to the premiere. Like they paid him $2,300 for the film rights. Like he wasn't invited to its first screening. Like it still remains one of his favorite adaptations. Stephen King really likes the film.
Didn't he credit De Palma for his like career in some way? Like he's just like, yeah, this movie then made me sell books, you know?
Yeah, like no, and the thing is he sold this book, and granted, like this book never should have come to be. He gave up on it, and his wife found it in the garbage and read through it and said, why did you throw this away? He's like, it's too long for the magazines, because he would write short stories for magazines, some of them sometimes like nudie mags. And he's like, it's too long. I don't know where it's going. And she says, like, I like it, finish it. And so he does, and he pitches it, and he sells it at first for $2,300. These guys were living on scraps. They were so broke at the time. And I was watching this interview with Stephen King. He's like, we were so broke, we had to disconnect our phone. We had to choose what services to cut off. It was either that or the baby formula. Mm. And this allowed them to put the phone back up. And then at which point he's like, okay. And then our agent told me most likely, like after all the sales went through, we'd be getting maybe 60,000. Maybe we can move out of this apartment. That 60,000 turned out to be 400,000. And he was finally able to move on and write another book. And I think that book was The Shining, if I'm not mistaken.
It might be Salem's Lot, then The Shining.
Salem's Lot. Yeah, no, you're right. Salem's Lot and then The Shining. But he was not a very well-known author at the time.
And this, I believe he was
is what started it all.
I believe he was also on enough cocaine that he does not remember writing this book. It has been quite some time since I have read Stephen King's.
He did a lot of cocaine.
Yeah, I feel like I need to start, I guess, if I'm just going to
My understanding is like,
man, Adderall is really hard to get a hold of right now. And I'm just thinking cocaine might be the substitute.
Yeah. My understanding is Carrie was both a guy. Oh, man, my wife totally saved me. Also, cocaine. Actually, I wrote a really good book. I guess I should keep doing that.
I can now feed my cocaine habit.
And yeah, I feel exactly, like De Palma can definitely appreciate some cocaine.
There's a man. Okay. So
You can just feel it in the movie. Like, this has some like coke vibes in it. Like that scene where they're in the tuxedo shop is so fucking weird. There's like the Alvin and the Chipmunks fast forward thing. Like, I just love the clash of tones in this movie. I think it works because, like you mentioned, like it's very sensual, sexual in some ways, but also so awkward and repressed. Like, that's really the tension in the movie.
Exactly. And it's also stuff like, so I was talking to my sister about because like I watched this movie again with, and I called my sister and I was like, hey, so I think it would be irresponsible as a white cis man to just not talk to a woman about the opening of Carrie, because holy shit, is this movie insane. And we talked a lot about the Pen 15 show and how well
I've seen that. Very good show, by the way.
Yeah, doing a great job of contextualizing and elaborating on the awkwardness that you get in junior high. But the other thing I realized was, Brian De Palma, for a guy who is known for some super sleazy shit, like Dress to Kill and Body Double are sleazy ass movies, like some real 42nd Street, sleazy porno theater dirty. And I gotta say, he shoots Sissy Spacek with a lot of restraint and a lot of like, it's about respect, sexy. Well, yeah, like it is.
Well, her husband was on set too, so there's that.
Well, but you know what I mean? Like, for a movie that could have been that leery, it was shockingly respectful for a movie that, yes, is showing a woman having her period for the first time. But it wasn't like, look at all the crease. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't gross. It wasn't, God, like, because Body Double is such a, I love that movie, but I need to take a shower when I'm done with that movie. It is
a lot of showers Carrie too.
But like Carrie, at least I feel like,
I forgot that the title screen was during the shower. Like, while I was watching, I'm like, okay, for the Instagram, I'm going to get the title of the thing, I'm going to post it in, and it goes to the shower scene. I'm like, and nope, can't do that.
The opening scene is so interesting in terms of like, I mean, because I think I agree with you in terms of that it feels very respectful, but it also opens with like 40 seconds of panning of naked women. But
we get full bush on that one.
But at the same time, I feel like it's definitely just contrasting the two. Like, they're all together. They're so there's a bravado about their body. There's no shame whatsoever. And then,
which is healthy. It was you go to Europe and like, they're like, yeah, no, that's it's pretty standard. Like, I don't see the problem with this.
Like, I think I'm just trained to think that that was like, oh, this is lurid, but it didn't feel like that. It felt sort of accurate, and it also was making a thematic point. And then contrasting with Carrie, who was having this, I thought that was more sensual, but it was also like this, the only time in the movie where she sort of feels like she's actually, until the end, like in her body, exploring it and like feeling okay about herself. Like, it's very sensual. And then all of a sudden, there's an intruder, or like all of a sudden the literally the most horrifying thing I can think of happened. Can you imagine like not even knowing what a period is and then that happening? Like, that to me, that speaks to a whole societal level of fear that I feel myself. Like, I could never speak to obviously having a period, but just the idea of like not being told stuff. Like, I feel that every day. Like,
and she's genuinely upset at her mom. Like, why didn't you fucking tell me that this was a thing? You've had all this time to prepare me for this. And like, and that's a genuine thing to ask your parent if they don't fill you in on that. Like, what's wrong with you?
And it shows her mom that she just thought she could repress a period from her daughter. Like that, unless you sin, you won't actually become a woman or you won't ever bleed. Like, that's her, how fucked up she is. And it's really just passing on the trauma and the the abuse and it's so.
But what's kind of nice though in this film though, at the same time, you see her pushing back against that before she goes to the prom. She literally says like, no, I'm going to be my own person.
Yes.
I'm tired of living under like this super repressed kind of situation that you have. Like she recognizes that the environment she's growing up in is wrong. And so it's a very empowering scene watching her stand up to her super religious mother. Like it's a very powerful scene.
Right. And then that sort of sets the tone for like that fantasy prom of like where you're saying, like, how can she believe this is happening? But I mean, I think we've all had sort of those desires and dreams about high school, especially of like what this can be. And it was like this perfect moment. She's even kissing Tommy, and that actually didn't even feel wrong when I'm watching it. Like it felt like Tommy kind of a nice
Tommy, like the personification of Tommy as someone who's actually like, she's kind of cool. Like, I like this girl. Like, I know I'm supposed to be just doing this because I'm in a, you know, Can't Hardly Wait movie, but I do really like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like that was one of the things that was great. So surprising to me about the movie was his character, which should like if just swap the casting of him and John Travolta. And right. Just have John Travolta be like that douche who's like, yeah, baby. Yeah, no, go ahead. Blow me on the stage. I don't care. Like, that could have been... It would have totally made sense for that jockey dude. But also, I think you would have spent the last half of the movie being like, Carrie, don't. Hey. And I think having this blonde, cute... nice seeming kind of guy who kind of comes around to her, I think really goes the extra mile of being like, oh, you sweet summer child, I totally see how you would have bought into this, but no, because I've seen a horror movie before.
It's so funny that there's a percentage of a chance that he could have played Luke Skywalker.
Ooh,
like, because because George Lucas and De Palma were very good friends, because on the back lot, they bonded over the fact that they were the only two directors on the back lot that had beards. Weird thing over. But you know, like Brian they shared the audition. Opening
crawl, right?
What's that?
You know that Brian De Palma wrote the opening crawl for Star Wars.
Ooh. Really? I feel like I knew that, but I'd forgotten until you reminded me.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no. So they did a test screening at George Lucas's house. And basically Steven Spielberg says, I think this movie's going to make $1 million. And Brian De Palma stood up, threw his hat on the ground. It was like, George, no one isn't going to understand this nonsense. You need an opening crawl. Good God, so much stuff is going on. And like, and Marsha Lucas to like completely redo all of Star Wars. He's like, no, this is nonsense. And that's where the opening crawl of Star Wars comes from, because Brian De Palma had a nervous breakdown.
That's incredible, and he deserves like $100 million just in residuals alone. Because like that is the thing. Like, what's a Star Wars movie?
Just picturing Brian De Palma going, George, no.
I think, and just go back to our boy Tommy. Like, you mentioned the really long scene about needing convincing to do it. That again adds to the level of like sort of believing that he's a decent human. I there's also the other part of me of like, well, his opening scene is that he, you know, plagiarized a poem and is clearly not on the up and up and could just be trying to get laid with this like virginal woman, right? Like, that's the other end of this movie potentially. But I don't know. Then, I didn't buy that. Or I wanted the Carrie fantasy too. That's part of it. Like, I want him to be a nice guy. Unlike all these other assholes, like, holy shit. They are horrible.
I think
John Travolta, I've never been so happy to watch somebody die in a fiery blaze. I was like, that and Nancy Allen. I was like, fuck both of you.
Like, which, so like, Nancy much. Allen's the king of the pieces of shit.
Oh, she's the worst in this movie. She is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Two things, by the way. One, John Travolta's character in the book was originally written to be like your classic Stephen King bully character, just like a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm just like, I don't want to meet Stephen King's actual life bullies. He must have. Oh my God. What did Stephen King have to endure in high school? Holy shit. But then also too, the fact that like, I look at the whole situation of Tommy, Tommy is like the bare minimum in right. terms of, in terms of just like guys in high school. It's just pure, just pure rampant hormones. And he's about as good as it gets with that group. Because even at the end, like when she gets covered in the pig blood, he's like, what the fuck is this shit? Until a bucket kills him.
Yeah, he got killed by the bucket or knocked out and then died.
Which
in
the De Palma
melee.
Says
yeah.
the bucket killed him. The bucket, like the bucket smashed his skull in. In the book, like it actually like.
That's like, a heavy bucket.
I know.
Is that like kicking like, the bucket? Like, is that like the closest we get? I mean, it's
I guess,
it's like
I guess that
the
is
bucket.
The closest to kicking the bucket.
Where does that come from? I feel like there's a literal example where that's a thing.
Yeah.
But
well, I'm gonna Google this right now.
A live Google.
Oh no. But by the way, Ken, you look like De Palma is shooting you right now. You are so hazy. It looks like somebody just rubbed grease on your camera.
Oh my God. I love, yeah. This movie looks like an after school special and then gone real bad. Like that's yep. what it is.
Ken
yeah.
has really committed to the De Palma look right here is what we're
looking
at.
I love it.
Yeah. This whole, yeah. The whole movie is literally just like a little bit of a Vaseline smeared on the lens. There's always like, it's always got that William Shatner kind of fucking filter
yeah.
on it.
Yeah.
yeah. It's got like the green edge lights or like some weird colored edge light always. It's just, it's such a weirdly naturalistically theatrical movie. And that's such a hard, weird line to walk. But I don't know very many other movies that do that have the artifice, but also have this reality. Like, I'm sorry, like the scene of her in the bathroom at the beginning of this movie is one of the most like raw, horrifying, realistic scenes I've ever seen. And then it's also this movie with this fucking gauze filter and dirty pillows and green, like, and just like, and everything is this big, everything is split diopters or split screens or big long crazy takes. You know, and even scenes that like the one with Tommy, which it's just the split diopter in the like in the classroom. It's just
yes.
like
oh, right.
his face is
so it's and you're talking about like that shot where literally both the distant and the close up are completely
yeah,
focused,
so,
right?
Yeah. So what that is okay. that's called a yeah. So what that's called is a split diopter, which is essentially you are taking so there's a lens, right, that's on the camera, and then there's a second lens that you are now putting like a filter on front of the camera lens. And so you are able to set the focus on the actual camera lens, but then by positioning the other person in relation to the other lens, you can create two focuses at the same time. So you can have something like this close to the camera and be in focus and all the way back there. It's actually a very complicated thing to do. And boy, does Brian.
There were a shit ton of complicated shots. There is one shot
oh my God, yeah.
during the prom that took literally over 30 takes. And because mm-hmm. there were so many moving parts going on during that scene, like somebody, like the cameraman wasn't hitting his mark properly, or it was just like, all these different things. It got so difficult to shoot that the producer on set literally came up to him and had a shouting match with De Palma. And De Palma pretty much like the producer was saying, you need to simplify this and we need to get on with the shooting schedule. And De Palma's like, this is 100% necessary. Either you let me do what I need to do or I quit.
Yeah.
Like De Palma was literally willing to quit on the spot after like this shot that was taking like over 30 takes. It is insane the amount of work that he put into this shit.
So you have to. So like this is a hill that I will die on. As a director, you only have one piece of power. And that is to say, then you should do it yourself and to turn around and walk away off set. Because otherwise, they are just going to make you do whatever they want you to do. And the only thing, and like, this is a quote from David Fincher, is you have to not want to make the movie as much as they want to make the movie. Mm. And if they want to make the movie more than you, you will have the power. And if you want to make the movie more than they want to, they will have the power. And that is like, because here's the thing. Brian De Palma had to be right. He had to actually fucking make Carrie. We have to be having this discussion now. Otherwise, he's just some jerk who got fired for being too much of a weirdo. That is the game that you have to be right. You have to, you know, you got to be Brian De Palma. You know, you got to make the good movie if you're going to push your chips to the middle of the table. Otherwise, you never get to push your chips to the middle of the table. And then you have to be right when you make that bet. You know what I mean? Like, any poker player can make a big bet. What makes a great poker player is collecting the money after you've made the big bet.
Right. Yeah. The confidence is one part, but then having the goods in the other. I was actually going to bring it back to what you were talking about, like the complicated split thing. And I was wondering, Ken, like, what is he trying to say by doing that so much? Like, what, like the visual language there, like, what is that? How does that connect with us thematically? Like, to see the distance of them.
I think what Brian is doing is there is, so obviously there's like a very Rube Goldberg, part of this, like the whole thing is, how is Carrie going to get the pig's blood dumped on her? Like, it was a spoiler
right
for Carrie from a movie from 1976. I think, and in particular, the moment that I think made this thing so effective for me was realizing that both the student and the teacher who realized that something is happening. And it is that push and pull. So there's a very famous story about Hitchcock when they say, what's the difference between horror and suspense? And he said, oh, that's very simple. A horror is when a bus explodes on a bus. And suspense is when you see a bomb underneath a bus. And then you cut to two people talking. And he's exactly right. Because you know there's a bomb on the bus.
So he predicted speed.
Well, like, so, but it's the difference between the two. It's suspense versus horror. One is a shock, one is a jump scare. And the other one is you being like,
so what you're saying is speed is a suspense film.
Speed. So one of the best examples.
Action
of this
suspense,
is,
yeah.
Well, so one of the best examples of this is in Scream. When Jamie Kennedy is sitting on the couch saying to Jamie Lee Curtis, Jesus Christ, Jamie, look out behind you. The killer is behind you. And then Ghostface in Scream is behind Jamie Kennedy, who is screaming at Jamie Lee Curtis, Jamie, look behind you.
Jamie's speaking for Jamie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is pure suspense. That is what this movie gets right. This is what, like, this is everything that Brian De Palma, in the hands of a lesser director, this movie would just be this bitch got mad and like torched everybody at this high school prom. And
well, what's
instead,
great,
it's like a 20 minute drawn out. You're almost cheering for her. And at the same time, you're horrified for her and you know, it's not going to end well. And that's what I think that Brian gets so right about this is the, of course, this is how this was going to end. You can't just push a girl like this and expect to get away with it forever. Like, you know, this movie, a couple, like, it would be so easy to write this movie in the 90s or 2000s, and it would just be about an incel kid instead. You know, it would just be Carl instead of Carrie. And he just, you know, and he'd just be mean and mad. And the only difference is instead of bringing the AR-15, he just bring his brain.
Which also brings me to another interesting point about this film is that this film, I mean, keep in mind that, like, you know, the age that this film was brought up to, like, Carrie at the time was on the 77th, well, was it number 77th on the list of most banned and controlled books, specifically A, because of the religious aspects of it, but also B, because it is a woman literally decimating an entire school. This is pre
Columbine.
Like, right. To parents, this was unheard of. To us, this is a Wednesday.
Which is really fucked up. But
which can we just talk about how fucked up that is?
Well, also what's fucked up is that we're sort of on the side of the person killing everyone, right? Like, that's You know, that, like,
that's fucked up.
I mean, we would never say that about any of the things that we're seeing nowadays, but like in this movie, Carrie's.
But this speaks to the genius of Brian De Palma.
John Travolta and Nancy Allen straight up suck in this movie. Like, in a real. Yeah. Like, no.
It's people who are taking down, like, they are the good guy with a gun. John Travolta and his girlfriend are the good guy with a gun. And this speaks to De Palma's, like, gift as a filmmaker is that, like, in the book, not only does Carrie. Like, in the book, Carrie, like, she gets the pig's blood dropped on her, and she leaves the gym. She actually trips over the stage. While people are laughing at her, she leaves the gym, takes a moment, and then turns around and then literally massacres her entire high school, like, her entire senior class, but then proceeds to go and then destroy her entire town. Now, do we see that in the film? No, because to De Palma, her high school was at that point her life.
Yeah.
And so it's like A, there are obviously budgetary restraints that they would have. It's like, but you don't need to see her destroying an entire town to understand that she is destroying her world. Like, you don't need that. You just need, it's like, we can show her outside blowing up John Travolta.
Nancy Allen, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like that's all the extra that you need to see. You don't really need to see anything outside. The fact that she kills the one teacher that was kind to her.
Yeah.
Is to you, to the audience, showing you like exactly like she's blowing up the whole town.
Well, it's also
right. She snapped. Right.
Like I think the teacher character is also another perfect example of, in almost every other movie I can think of, there wouldn't be this character. There would just be this monster teacher who was like the one that you'd be like, ah, get her ass, Carrie. She sucks too. And like the scene where she goes after the girls and is like, leave her alone. Like when she belts Karen Allen in the mouth and she's like, it's not funny. Leave her alone. You're like, that is some real mama bear watched. Like, I'm not.
That teacher should not be hitting her students, well, by the way. Well, that is. Like, that is
I've also got to assume that that's also the teacher who has seen this girl get away with this nonsense so many times. And she's like, oh, you want to see who the bigger cub is? Boom. And because like, it's not a. Because there's a lot of movies in like 1940s.
But in today's age, that would immediately movies. Be like, and fired.
Well, yes.
Oh, yeah.
But like, but then there's a difference between like, you know what I mean? Like there is a slap that you give somebody when they're being hysterical. And there's the slap that she gives this girl. And it is a knock it off. It's not funny. I'm bigger than you. And I will have you I will call the principal.
It was a very sexy dominance
it was not a polite slap. It was like, you know what I mean?
It was very violent.
It was not open handed. She punched that girl and was like, do it again. Take Carrie's name out of your fucking mouth. Like, which is just like, oh, okay.
But what's even more fascinating too is that like she goes to bat for Carrie, but then when Sue tries to get her boyfriend Tommy to take her to the prom, she's like, okay, what the fuck are you up to? No, you're asking Carrie to the prom. Nobody asks Carrie to the prom.
Mm-hmm.
It's very double-sided. Even the teacher who stands up for her doesn't have confidence in Carrie.
Yeah, she said, like, you know, you'd look ridiculous next to Carrie. That was the line to me where I was like,
yeah. That's,
I can see the first part of like, okay, something's up. Because also Carrie says that too. She's like, I think they're going to trick me again. So yeah. So Miss Collins is like, okay, let me investigate. Because I mean, yeah, we've set the standard that she's going to be investigating like crazy. But yeah, that line also felt like, oh, maybe I don't trust her. Like maybe she doesn't completely think as highly of Carrie as she sort of pretends. Like she's kind of trying to make her over, but also, yeah, I don't know. She seems similar to like Tommy and Sue where she's not 100% acting out of love or care. Like, I don't know. Like Sue to me is like acting out of guilt. Tommy just doesn't know what to do. And Miss Collins is like a confused mother, you know, kind of a thing. I don't know.
Like her feelings are coming from such a good place where she's like, I don't understand what these motherfuckers are doing. But if you think these motherfuckers aren't being motherfuckers, and maybe I'm wrong. You know what I mean? Like that's like,
who's trying to start some shit, but I'm going to end it.
Like it really feels to me like one of those things where you want to sit down with somebody and be like, look, I want nothing more than right now to be absolutely wrong about what I'm going to tell you. However, do not trust those fucking people. I would love nothing more to find out they are actually good people.
Keep your armor on.
Yeah. But like, please, keep your shit, like stay frosty, please, because there's just no way. And then, yeah, and you see, and
she makes it worse, by the way. She makes everything worse because of this. She just escalates everything. Like that's, yeah. It's kind of on her. I'm blaming her now.
Well, she escalates it because she wants to pretend that these people are not as bad as they fucking clearly are. Like, not to get into politics, but there's a lot of that today where people are like, can you believe these fucking people? And you're like, yes, yeah. I have been watching them do this for 30 years. Why are you surprised now? And they're like, well, I didn't think they'd do this. And you're like, okay, sure, I guess. But
let's just, you know, give them detention instead of suspension, can, you know, and give them the worst punishment in the world, push-ups.
Yeah. Can you believe all the Republicans tried to repeal Roe when they said they weren't going to? Yes, because they lie. And everyone's like, you know, how could we have known? I did. And like, come on, I'm a dork. Like, you should have known.
Yeah, no, their nature is pretty clear, but it's also like clearly coming from a society that's just hitting them all the time. I mean, that, like, the John Travolta, that couple is very fucked up. Like, they're both so abusive to each other in different ways.
You know what's particularly funny to me, the irony of it, is that there were several cast members in this film that through half of the process thought they were doing a comedy. Like, they, granted, like, keep in mind, Stephen King was not a well-known, you know, household name at the time. Horror was not necessarily something he was known for or even known at all. Like, John Travolta, along with, again, I'm going to continue. I don't Nancy have Allen. IMDb. Yeah, Nancy Allen, thank you. Along with Nancy Allen and Carrie's mother, they all thought that they were doing a comedy. And Brian De Palma had to pull each of those actors aside and be like, hey, we're making a horror film. We need you to do it this way. And they were like, wait, what?
I also think that kind of works. Yeah.
It works perfectly.
Well, it's what makes camp camp. One of the great quotes about camp is that camp from Roger Ebert, which is that camp can only be found. It cannot be made. Ah. And that's what this, like, This feels like a big theatrical high school story because it is, and that's how it feels. So that's how it's told. The reality of this situation is actually probably much more small, and like the reality of this movie is something much closer to, we need to talk about Kevin. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It is not what this is. This is
great movie, by the way. Have you?
Yes, incredible.
I actually
movie.
Have not seen
Ezra Miller. Yeah, Ezra Miller sucks. But like,
yeah, fuck this, Ezra Miller. But seriously, yeah, we need to talk about that. Kevin is an amazing film. Yeah,
but like, that's what this, like, this movie gets the feeling of what that is correct, as opposed to the reality of what it's feeling being correct.
That's a really good point. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, it's also what makes this movie a great. It's why we're recommending this movie for October, and not We Need to Talk About Kevin, because that movie's kind of a super bummer. It's super good, but like, it's also a real, like.
And also, we need not put any more money into Ezra Miller's pocket. But well, also, yes. I didn't see We Need to Talk About Kevin like being made into an award-winning musical like Carrie was before it became a fucking thing. I shit you not. Yes, there is a Carrie musical that was made in the 90s.
Oh, no,
it was an award-winning musical. It was popular. It was a good musical.
It's a perfect, it's perfect for a musical. Like, it's all there. Yeah, like, this is so, it's so over the top.
You have
like
blood, love, despair, childhood trauma. It's all there for a musical, baby.
That's every musical.
I thought they made a musical about, we need to talk about Kevin and he's about to die.
We need to talk about Kevin.
Yeah, I was like, first off, no. And second off, if they did, I would have heard about it. Thank you.
Well, it would have been that thing like you saw Cats.
Oh, well, Cats is incredible.
I saw Cats opening day.
Oh, Ken, you just found yourself a best friend. Somebody just said Cats is amazing.
I got tickets to see it at Pantages in like a week. Yeah.
No, I love the Cats movie. It is an existential crisis. It is like having a stroke.
Oh,
it
is. It's terrifying. It's so good.
It has one of the funniest stories. So one of the biggest things with the Cats movie, sorry, we're just going to go ahead and just divert this whole train right now. one of the craziest things about the Cats movie is that Tom Hooper, director of the $150 million movie Cats, doesn't know anything about special effects. So every single shot that they did for the movie, he insisted would be rendered out to its final form before he would look at it, which is just like saying, I want to see every page of my comic book inked and colorized before I approve the outline. And you're like, well, that's not how outlines work. That's not even what an outline is. Wow. Okay. You can't. So
I'm literally just talking about a comic book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Tom Hooper, the director of the $150 million movie Cats, is on set with Taylor Swift and Taylor Swift's dad. Because it turns out if you make a movie with Taylor Swift, her dad shows up, because I guess that's a thing that you have to deal with.
And why not?
Yeah. Right. So Taylor Swift's dad pulls Tom Hooper aside, the director of the $150 million movie Cats, and says, hey, Tom Hooper, my daughter, Taylor Swift, is about to do this big musical number. Wouldn't it be funny if before the big musical number, she sprinkled catnip over all the cats, and that's why they broke into song and dance? And then Tom Hooper, the director of the $150 million movie Cats, said with a straight face and without joking, what is catnip? And then Taylor Swift's dad explained what catnip was. Then Tom Hooper went ahead to explain what catnip was to the art department, where he was like, can you have a catnip bottle ready after lunch? And they were like, sure, Tom, this is the least nightmare thing you've asked us to do. And that is where, like, they gave this man $150 million to make a movie about cats, and he didn't know what catnip was. And I can't get a job? Ridiculous. I hate it. Hollywood is nonsense.
And that catnip part was incredible. Taylor Swift's dad, 100 points. Taylor Swift's 100 points.
No points. Yeah, yeah. No notes. I love Taylor Swift's dad so much.
He needed to be on set that day. He knew. He knew. No.
You know what Carrie needed? You know what Carrie needed? Taylor Swift's fucking dad.
Carrie, you're not wrong. Carrie needed anybody in her life that cared and that actually listened to her and actually held her.
Carrie like, could have really done with Taylor Swift's dad.
But just a bedazzled bottle that says pig blood.
Oh my! Can we like, we go to the this fucking pig farm magic. And beat the shit out of a pig in this movie? That
They're so nonchalant about the way that they're going to get a incredible amount of pig blood. Like, I would have so many questions about, like, all right, but whose car? And, like, I have leather seats. And so, like, it's a bucket, but, like, it's going to spill. So does someone have saran wrap? Maybe we can get, like, a 5-gallon bucket, right? Is someone going to a Kroger soon?
But he was pouring it out of, like, a gasoline canister. Yeah. Like, it's how like did he get pipe? The blood?
Oh yeah, no, there was a lot of missing scenes.
Yeah, yeah, like it's just coming out of some gas.
There's some logistical shit that I need to know.
Russian natural gas just coming out of a tube, like it's like,
I mean, have you ever gotten blood out of a pig before? So you knock it out, you bludgeon it
every morning,
and then you just unscrew, and then the blood just comes out into the gas. Like it's just like taking gas out of a machine. Like it's insane, but I would have loved to see that. Like, if we had like a Blu-ray special feature of those,
show
like,
us the steps, scenes. Brian De Palma.
Yeah, I want the storyboards of that. I want the outline.
I want the De Palma cut. Give us the pig cut, De Palma.
I will give whatever the fuck his name is, Billy, some credit for literally killing a pig for his awful girlfriend.
Oh, he's so like
spousal goals right there.
That jerk. Slam. Like, no, I was 100% expecting him to be like, hey, you do it. All right, fine. Make me, hey, come on. This is Italian poly, like some sort of Dirk Diggler. I'm kind of mad about this.
John Travolta like, rolled up his
sleeves. He just was like, give me that hammer, you fucking pussy. Slam. And just like, okay, that dude is not a, hey, we need to talk about John Travolta, guys.
Well, like, we probably do, but
probably do.
Although to be fair, that character is like hammered drunk the entire movie. So he might not remember doing this, but I also love the character that refused to do it. I think his name is Freddy. He doesn't do a single thing he doesn't want to do. Like my favorite part is when he asked to like join the ballot collecting and the guy's like 6:30. He's like, nah, how about 8? I'll be there at 8. And he's like, okay. Yeah. Like it was just, I just love that guy. Like
The other person wasn't like,
the side characters in this film are brilliant. just like Tommy's friends when they're trying on tuxes.
So
like,
how's
he look good? He looks beautiful. You were a good friend.
Yeah. I don't think Ruffles will look good on me.
They call each other beautiful.
Yeah. Hang on. Get that man a t-shirt. Perfect. No notes. Yeah.
You wouldn't take him to the prom? No, not in Ruffles.
Yeah. Like, it's such a weird, like, it's such a scene from a completely different, like, it's from Superbad or something. You know what I mean? Where, like, because, like, where it would be out of place if you're like, and then at the end of Superbad, they drown the prom queen in pig's blood. And you'd be like, the Michael Cera movie? I thought that they were just trying to get hand jobs or whatever, but yeah, sure. Okay.
Well, I think like, to me, it's like they are in a different movie than Carrie, right? They're living lives where they can actually joke and have fun. And like, they actually have friends. Like that scene was ridiculous, but I feel like I've lived that scene in some way. And then it's so off everything else, but it does just sort of set up the big, huge contrast in the life and that those people are dead in about 20 minutes. Like that's so fucked up. Yeah.
I mean, that's the what we need to do about Kevin thing. That is kind of like but if that other guy thinks he's the Joker, I don't know. It's not going to end well, guys. Yeah, you're right. Like I'm by no means pro bullying or anything, but like, You kind of understand. You're like, well, you know, that guy was really serious, and so turns out that wasn't the guy you should have pushed around. And I'm not saying it's okay, but from his perspective,
I'm just saying, please don't fuck around and find out.
Yeah, like so. Right. I was trying to talk to my sister about this, and we were talking about casting, and I was trying to think like Sissy Spacek, her casting is so good because you see her and you want to protect her. You want to keep the bullies away from her. You want the boy to be nice. Where if you like cast this movie with like Aubrey Plaza, you'd be like, oh, well, you done fucked up. I don't know if you know this. Aubrey Plaza also has telekinesis. So now you are double fucked, sir. Like this person is going to come and ruin your life. Like with the... Ingrid, what's the movie?
Ingrid Goes West.
Yeah, Ingrid Goes West. Perfect example of like a, I don't know what you thought was going to happen when you messed with Aubrey Plaza, but that is exactly what I would have said you were going to get.
I don't want to socialize with Aubrey Plaza, let alone like mess with her. Granted, like gorgeous woman, but I would never want to like
be anywhere near her.
her awkwardness just terrifies me.
I think she's great. Yeah, she's her own person.
I continue my open invitation that she can come ruin my life anytime she wants.
Ken, do you
that would take like 12 seconds for her
to come and step on you?
Yeah. If there's any way, like I've literally seen multiple interviews where she's like, I don't understand it. Everyone on the internet wants me to step on them. And it's just like, yeah, that's exactly your energy, Audrey.
her saying that is totally, yeah, like that she's somehow oblivious to it. I don't know if I buy that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's the other thing. Like, that's a very Audrey Plaza thing to say, Audrey Plaza.
Yeah.
Are you saying Audrey or Aubrey? Because it's Aubrey, right? Am I forgetting?
Have I been saying Audrey?
I think it's Aubrey. No, I think you're
it's
right.
Aubrey. It's definitely Aubrey.
Yes.
Plaza.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Aubrey okay. with okay. a B. Yes.
I have, this is not my first whiskey I've had. I've literally been at a charity ball where I've had like three other whiskeys. And so yeah. Oh yeah, Andy, I didn't explain to you what took me so long to fucking get here.
Well, I think the audience needs to know.
Oh, we originally planned to like to record this thing on Wednesday. We pushed it because Kenny had a sore throat and his throat was hurting him. So we pushed it to Friday. And then I got home and my wife said, hey, remember you promised your mom you'd go to this charity ball that her church is sponsoring. And I'm like, no, I don't remember that, but I guess we'll go. And she said, we'll get out by 8:10 so that I could get, and we're 3 hours ahead of you guys, by the way. And so we're like, cool. We're getting up at this time. 8:45 rolls around. And so I don't want to be the asshole of the charity ball to be like, hey, TikTok, I got a podcast to record. Fuck homeless people and their free healthcare.
I start getting texts from David being like, I swear we'll be home soon. And then Katie, his wife, starts texting me. She's like, I have to pee and I'm very hungry. And then David texts me, we're being pulled over right now. And I was like, hey, man, you let me know when everything's worked out and we will record then. And everything seems to have worked out. So, you know, could be worse.
Yeah, my wife is currently at her neighbor's place hanging out with her puppy. And I might have snapped at her once or twice. And I owe her like 5 million apologies.
And you're recording this from jail right now.
Oh, yes. It's a nice jail. It's very nice, as you can see behind me. The jail that is my spousal life that I love. Love my wife.
I wasn't making that joke. You.
One thing I want to bring up kind of as we're starting to wrap things up here, and I guess this is just a hill I'm going to choose to die on. And I guess the people on the podcast can agree with me or not. Brian De Palma for me is a real example of the different, like appreciating Brian De Palma is the difference between being a movie snob and a movie aficionado. Because I think Brian De Palma is such an incredible filmmaker that even if you don't like the movie that he's making, like a great example is Black Dahlia, which is a real nightmare of a screenplay of like four different drafts from three different screenwriters and multiple studio heads being brought in. And they just from a real logistical nightmare. And the movie is just not good. The filmmaking in it, however, is scrumptious. Like it is so good. It is like, and
decadent.
It is decadent. And if you, to me, it is like, learning to appreciate a great guitar solo in the middle of a bad song or by a bad band. You know what I mean? It would be like if you found out that Carlos Santana was the guitarist for Hoobastank or something where you're like, wait, hold on. Like John Mayer is a great example of someone who is actually legitimately one of the best guitar players playing today. But like, that's just not the music he makes that makes his money. So that's not the John Mayer music people hear. But if you hear John Mayer play guitar, that dude is like incredible. That is Eric Clapton breaks down and weeps kind of level of guitar playing. But
I just want to say, I had that exact thought about John Mayer. And then I saw him in Dead and Company and I'm like, oh shit. Yeah. Like, cause he's, yeah, just traveling around with the Grateful Dead right now. And he is incredible. I didn't know this either, but Ken is 100% right. He is.
Yeah. My brother is. Yeah. Like there's songs where he's playing both like percussion and rhythm at the same time by himself. And I'd like to point out that's normally two people's job. And he's, And I can understand if you're like, well, I just don't like John Mayer's pop music. But what I would say to you is, so you are not a music lover. You are a music snob. You like, you like the accolades. And Brian De Palma, if you cannot appreciate the filmmaking that this man can do, I don't know what to tell you. And there's a huge difference between a good movie and a well-made movie. There are, like, all you need to do is watch a $60 million middle-of-the-road romantic comedy, and you will see an immaculately crafted, boring piece of shit. They spent every single dollar. It all went up on screen. Jersey Girl.
Oh, no.
Jersey Girl is shot by Vilmos Zsigmond. Like, it is shot by one of the five best cinematographers to ever walk the planet. And it looks like a Kevin Smith movie, because what's Vilmos going to do? It's a movie about Ben Affleck and his daughter and a play and Sweeney Todd. And so it looks...
Imagine his disappointment as he was like, God damn it.
Well, but you know
what I mean? Like, he looks like the Ben Affleck meme.
They hired Vilmos, and Vilmos showed up, and that's as good as that movie is ever going to look.
He did his job, and goddamn it, if that isn't just the most respectable thing that you could say about Brian De Palma. There's a lot of
people who show up and do their jobs, and that's not bad. There's, you know, man, like, Kevin, like, say what you want about Nicolas Cage. That man, if you pay him a paycheck, shows up to fucking work. Bruce Willis shows up. And that's the most you can say about Bruce Willis. Nicolas Cage shows up, cracks his knuckles, and said, what are we doing today, motherfuckers? And you get what you pay for.
Oh, Nicolas Cage is a hero. I don't think he's ever...
Nicolas Cage is a national icon. I love that man
treasure.
So much.
National treasure. Oh, you had it right
son
there.
Of a bitch.
There we go. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I missed it.
And Vilmos, when you say pay him his full rate, he shows up and he will shoot Jersey Girl. But, you know, it's going to make it as good as he can, but it's still...
Oh, well, Ken, we are... This has been an absolutely delightful episode, and Andy, like, we cannot possibly thank you enough. Like, this has been absolutely spectacular, and also, like, I don't think we gave you, like, your proper opportunity to, like, plug your pluggables shit. pitch what you got going on. Like, you are an absolute artist. You've got, like, and you and I, like I had the pleasure of being on your podcast as well. You know, you're the creator and host of the Naked Man podcast and Movies with Friends, and it has been an absolute pleasure working with you. Please tell us, good sir, what do you have going on right now during this glorious month of October?
All right, I will try to ape Piper Laurie here and get crucified right now. Just throw all the kitchen knives at me here. Let's see, one knife goes into this shoulder, and we got, the Naked Man podcast, a men's mental health podcast. I didn't even really know that's what I was doing. I do know that David is very forthcoming about his mental health on the interwebs. And I think it's just, like, for me, that's been my current journey of, like, oh, taking care of myself. I should start to do that. And it's sort of an interview show. Movies with Friends. That's the, let's see, what kind of kitchen knife is it? Right on the wrist, you know, goes right in here. I'm stuck now in between that fucking,
Real stigmata action. Going
yeah. Oh, the stigmata is happening. I am bleeding for my art, ladies and gentlemen. Movies with Friends, it is on indefinite hiatus, but there are like 50 episodes of a show on YouTube where it's me, including David. We watched House by the Cemetery, an incredible, incredible film. Also,
I love it.
On Shudder. So there was a reason we did that.
Yeah. Lucio Fulci.
Yep, exactly. And I think that was David's first Fulci experience, and hopefully not the last. Maybe I'm wrong, but that was my memory of that.
No, because we did, Ken, I think you and I, we didn't do a full Fulci one.
I don't think we've done a Fulci, because we did Fifth Chord, that's Franco Nero, but that's not Fulci.
We had done like a the genre, but we hadn't done Fulci yet.
We had
done Giallo, but we hadn't done Fulci.
Yeah.
But basically Movies with Friends was an excuse to watch movies with friends, which I think is exactly what this show is, but then with like a little spotlight on the drinks or the food that we're having with small local businesses and also for charity. And actually this is a Shudder tie-in. I did it in honor of a friend who is no longer with us, who his last gift to me was a subscription to Shudder. So, so like that was sort of my ode to my friend Chris. And yeah, it will come back in some way, but I sort of am trying to be kind to myself and not just try and do everything, because that's what I've lived my life.
You can't force that shit.
Can't force that shit. But basically, let's see. I am co-directing a stop motion horror film right now. Whenever you listen to this, maybe it'll exist in the world. But like, stay tuned for that. You can find my ramblings at Wandering Green on Instagram. And also I do a newsletter, kind of an experimental magazine where I share my work and my friend's art. And that's called Wanderings, and that's on Substack. So, I mean that, and there's like a million other things. I don't know. Like there's a lot of knives in me right now. I'm surprised I'm standing, but I am subsisting off of All Hallows Treat from Omagong Brewing.
Oh my God, I love it so much.
It is a Imperial Chocolate Peanut Butter Stout. Normally a peanut butter stout is like my my holy grail. Like I'm going to spend my life looking for one.
God, I love that actually peanut butter stout.
Well, see, I always want to, and they always disappoint me. That's like, it feels like they always taste a little artificial. They don't taste like the peanut butter of my dreams. This one, I can't say that the journey has ended because I'll still be looking, but this one did pretty well. So yeah.
It's as close as, you've come on your journey so far.
Exactly. And that's as an artist, what we can do, right? We're always going up that mountain.
Exactly.
And yeah, thank you so much.
The work of Sisyphus.
Literally getting up in the morning feels like that. but Ken, David, thank you so much for having me. I mean, yeah, I'm ready for Carrie too, by the way. I've never seen it.
I mean, who knows? I think like Ken, I'm going to pitch this idea to you right now. I'm thinking at some point this year, we got to do a sequel month.
Mm.
Yeah, we'll probably put together a list of some of the good ass sequels you wouldn't expect. We already did Exorcist 3, which is probably the best. Like, actually, this movie's super good. But yeah, I'm pretty sure we can find some extra stuff. If nothing else, you know, we can talk about Exorcist 2, which, you know, say what you will, does involve James Earl Jones dressed like a bee, which worth checking out just for that.
And speaking of, they're the Bates bees. The bees.
See?
That's their mascot. I was gonna ask why, like what that meant thematically, but I think it's like the pollen. It's kind of back to Piper Laurie's, like everyone's sniffing for your
pollen
period
Palmer.
yeah, pollen Palmer. But anyway, I don't know. Well, Basket Case 2. That's my pick.
Ooh, there we go. That's a goodie. David, nice. Do you want to tell the people where to plug your particular pluggables?
Absolutely, guys. You can follow us on Shudder_show, where I now I'm trying to get us as many active posts up there and try to interact with you guys as much as I can these days. You can follow me at _DW Marlowe, where I get up to my regular musings, everyday life happenings, woodworking stuff, and my cute, adorable puppy and wife. Kendall, what about you, good sir? Where can people find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Ken Stachnik, KenStachnik. You can obviously find us on Instagram and Twitter at Shudder Show. You can also email us, shuddershow@gmail.com. And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to all of our non-binary friends, most importantly, the biggest thing is always go fuck yourself.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
You eat shit.